From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The 5th annual Fort Myers Film Festival kicks off next week. The 5-day event includes screenings of a broad spectrum of intelligent independent films and documentaries from filmmakers around the world. We'll talk with festival organizers for a look at some of this year's offerings, and we'll hear from some filmmakers whose work will be featured this year. Plus, Governor Rick Scott recently declared March as Bike Month in Florida, but when it comes to safety for bicyclists sharing our roadways, the Sunshine State is the deadliest in the nation. Following a recent special investigation by the News Press, we'll explore what's behind the dangerous conditions and what's being done to make Florida roads safer for bicyclists and pedestrians. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. For bicyclists sharing the road with motorists, Florida is the most lethal state in the nation. Southwest Florida in particular, consistently ranks among the top most dangerous regions in the state for bicyclists. Following a recent investigation by the News Press, we take a closer look at the problem and possible solutions for making conditions safer. That conversation's coming up later this hour. But first, the Fort Myers Film Festival returns next week for its 5th year. The festival runs March 25th through the 29th and features a broad spectrum of independent films and documentaries from filmmakers around the world and right here at home. The festival kicks off with a red carpet gala, and event venues include the Barbara B. Mann Performing Arts Hall, Sidney and Byrne Davis Arts Center, the Alliance for the Arts, the Broadway Palm Dinner Theater, and Bell Tower 20 Cinemas. Joining me now in studio is founder and executive director of the Fort Myers Film Festival, Eric Raddatz. He's also a film curator for the Sidney and Byrne Davis Arts Center, and those are just a couple of the many hats he wears. Eric, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Great to be here. Hey, John. How's it going?
Good. Also with us in studio is documentary film director and NBC2 morning news anchor Natasha Verma. Natasha's film Hardy, which chronicles one woman's struggles to make it in the male-dominated field of professional boxing, will also be featured at the festival. It will be the closer. Natasha, great to see you again, and welcome back to the show.
Nice to see you, too. Thank you.
And joining us by phone is Ted Dinner-Smith. He's executive director of the film Most Likely to Succeed, which will kick off the festival Wednesday evening. The film, which takes a critical look at the history of education in the U.S., has garnered widespread acclaim and premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. Ted, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Good morning, John.
And I invite listeners to join our conversation as well. Connect with our guests by calling 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Or at WGCU.org, rather, or post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Eric, let's begin with you. Before we get into the details of this year's offerings, tell us generally about the festival and how would you characterize its growth over the past several years?
Well, we've really seen a community that is excited about the power of the art of film. And, in the last 5 years, we've gone from a few people knowing about us to now, when you mentioned the Fort Myers Film Festival, people have actually heard of us. Now, it doesn't hurt the fact that we're in the best venues in town. I won't go over them again, which you just said, but really everywhere through Fort Myers this March 25th through 29th, you're going to see awesome independent films that aren't in distribution anywhere else. These are films that will change the way you see things. They'll change the world that we live in. Might inspire you, make you laugh, but they certainly will entertain you. And so now when people who run into my kids or run into my wife and they say, oh, yeah, the Fort Myers Film Festival. So it's kind of nice that the name recognition certainly is something that I've noticed. And the crowds that come out now, too, they know what they're in for when they come out to the Fort Myers Film Festival.
I imagine that would also mean the greater notoriety, that you get more submissions each year as well.
That's true. And it's getting tougher and tougher because we get so many submissions. We really do sit through and watch all of them. Some of them are so fantastic. Some of them are just really terrible. And I say that in a good way, because sometimes the terrible ones remind you of what never to watch. It certainly has increased. And so now, having seen thousands of films come through, it's become harder because now we have better selections and greater quality of selections that come through. That CR Film Festival is one of the better ones, even in the nation. And they say, you know, we really want to be a part of your film festival now, which is something that we didn't have our first year because they had nothing to base on what our festival was even about.
And the variety of films, you know, looking at the schedule and the lineup, it really seems to transcend any kind of categorization. This is really just across any genre.
Yeah, and we have 85 films this year, and we have them from over 20 countries. And you'll see very poignant documentaries, and then you'll see very silly films. And everyone who submits films, and we think one consistent theme that we do see is really a passion for something, something that somebody gets very excited about. And so not being the bigger budget films, it might get lost. These are people who they're taking the money that's in their bank and they're making a film because they have something to say. And so that's really welcomed by the Fort Myers Film Festival. And most films you'll see there's a passion and often a mission behind them that makes the viewers generally excited to watch.
And can you give us some insight into the film selection process? I'm just thinking, given the variety of types of films you even have, it would be hard to have some kind of set criteria.
Well, you know, the one thing is that it's got to be good, and that's pretty
well, that's
much...
totally subjective, but okay.
No. Well, we have, like you said, different categories, short films, documentaries, and then you have a process is one where we have a team. The team will then review each of the films. They'll score it. They'll rate it. Generally, most every film I watch, so it's kind of like I'll wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then I'll watch films for the entire weekend, and I won't eat or drink anything.
Wow.
It's kind of like the commercial where he said, I was tired of paying for cable, so I started a film festival. And then you see him watching a goat walk past. But I'm excited about it. I get more excitement from these independent films than any of the bigger budget ones. But back to the process, you know, we've got a programming team. They all give their suggestions as to what they feel is important. Some stick out instantly and automatically are up for very serious consideration. Others right away kind of like, well, no thanks. But we do have a scoring, and then we have we block off the times, and then it's pretty much what you'd expect.
Sure. And, you know, I'm sure for you this is really a year-long process. It never really ends. But then, you know, beginning in the falls, you have the TGIM events. Can you just explain for folks who don't know what that's about?
Sure. TGIM, thank God for Independent Mondays, we have screenings where we let an audience take a look at our judging process. So included in the judging process, I should have mentioned, is we have a lot of public viewers who will say, we want to take a look at the shorts that have been submitted. And it's kind of like the first couple of weeks of American Idol, you know, where you have a couple that are just so good, and then you have a couple that you just sit and laugh at because they're so terrible. And then you think, someone actually submitted this. And we don't make fun of them too much, but a little bit. But the audience then will vote and say, because everyone sees a film differently. I've got my favorite films. You have your favorite films. And I'm sure, you know, when we talk to Ted and Natasha. So perspective is important. And generally, if we think too much about them, or if we have just one person deciding what's an important film, that's where festivals fail. When we have a voice from our audience from different demographics and backgrounds and more diversity, that allows us to program more diversity and speak to a greater audience, so that there's something for everyone. And that happens the first Monday of every month in Sydney Burn Davis Arts Center, and starts usually in September. So that'll be happening again in September 2015.
Is that common? Do other film festivals do something like that?
No, they don't. And it's interesting because there's a couple that have started to do it after we started to do it. And the filmmakers generally say, when they first see their films, like even in Sundance, I'm sitting at Sundance and the filmmakers are there and they're taking a Q&A, and they act like this is the first time they've ever seen their film publicly. And I think to myself, what a bad idea. You know, I mean, because you sit in the editing room and Natasha will tell you, you know, you're editing for what you think people will get. And if the timing's off, if it's a comedy particular, if the timing's off, or it doesn't quite stick with the common average film goer, you've lost them. And so we find that by pre-screening with a public audience, by the time it reaches the actual film festival, you're looking at some good films.
And, you know, a big part of the Thank God for Indie Mondays aspect of it, as you've already mentioned, is, you know, getting to interact with people and talk to other people about the film and realizing that we all have our own perspectives on it. Is that conversational aspect of it, that interaction, also part of the festival itself?
I think so. And I would say many people say it's their favorite part of the festival is the TJIMs. In fact, a lot of the TJIM regulars sometimes won't come out to the festival because they think they've seen all the films. Well, if they're listening, I'll tell you, you've only seen maybe 5 to 10% of the films that have screened. But these are people we find kind of coming out of the woodwork. It's almost like build it and they will come for independent filmmakers. So these are nerds. These are very bright nerds, very passionate, bright nerds who like films. And the discussion gets going and suddenly you can kind of empathize and understand what someone else sees in a film. And then you kind of understand them a little better and you become a little more tolerant and a little more understanding of your community. So that may be one of the, if not the finest part of this film festival is having TJIM leading up to it, because then we have a community who tells other friends about the films that are coming for the festival. And they're the nicest people in the world that will come out to the Fort Myers Film Festival. And they're listening now. Mm-hmm. And I would say they've become family to me. Most of my best friends now have come because we have a similar cause and a similar passion and a similar mission. And they're the best people out there.
And you spend all your time together making this happen, so you better become friends.
Yeah, I mean, it's quality of life, so you better like what you do.
Right. Well, the Fort Myers Film Festival returns for its fifth year. The event runs March 25th through the 29th. We're speaking today with the festival's founder and filmmakers whose work will be featured. You can join our conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. You can also comment on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Natasha, I wanted to turn to you now. You know, you directed your film Hardy, which is going to be screened. Give us just some general background on the film and the woman whose story you're telling.
So I met Heather Hardy a couple of years ago, and this is a story about her. She's a professional female boxer from Brooklyn, New York. When I met her, she was amateur, and in fact, she was also homeless. You know, she just discovered boxing. She was getting into it. And over the span of our filming, she became an international world champion, which was phenomenal for any filmmaker sitting on that kind of gold mine in a way. And so it is such an inspirational story to see her come from literally having nothing, growing up in a beach town where people said you'd never leave that town, and then becoming something, finding her purpose in life. And you get an insight of what it's like for a woman to be in a man's world, particularly boxing being very masculine, the struggles that she faces. And above all, it's a story about a woman going through boxing.
What was it about Heather, do you think, when you first met her? Because obviously you couldn't have known where this was going to go.
She's very captivating. She is raw. She is brutally honest in a refreshing way. And she's just funny. I think I remember the first thing she told me was I asked her, why do you fight? And how do you fight? Why do you fight? And she says, I fight like you just stole my mother's wallet and I have 2 minutes to get it back. And it's just so funny. It is so Brooklyn in a way. And she's a very charming person, and you feel for her, and you root for her, and you want her to win, which I think she does use to her favor.
And Natasha, of course, you're a journalist, and I would imagine you look at a documentary film very much like a piece of journalism.
Right.
But I imagine it's got to be hard to maintain any kind of I guess that distance and that objectivity when someone's allowing you into their life so intimately.
Right. With I'm on television and I do TV news. Those packages that we turn are so short, minute 30. But with something like this, it's so rewarding to build a relationship with someone and then peel back the layers and watch them give more and more axes and reveal more details of their life. It was difficult to keep a distance because I became so attached to her, and she has a very emotional story. I mean, she told me she was – I remember one day she said that she was raped as a 12-year-old girl, and that's why she fights. And she saw the man who raped her about a year ago walking the neighborhood, and she broke down, and she said, why am I still crying? I'm a fighter now. Why am I still crying? She's like, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about this. It's going to follow me for the rest of my life. So moments like that are so emotional for me. But I remember what the mission of the film was, I stepped back and I had a great crew that I worked with who also put things in perspective for me. So it was a journey, but you have to remember what the goal is.
Right. And is it particularly exciting or maybe even anxiety-inducing to have your film featured at a film festival in your town where you live?
I'm really excited, especially since I moved here about 8 months ago. A lot of Hardy is a big part of me, and it was huge for me in New York. And I was in Austin before that. We premiered in Austin and screened in New York. To bring it in Florida, where everyone was asking, when can we see Hardy? When can we see Hardy? This is it. This is the time that you can see it. And I'm really excited to show my coworkers, my family, my friends that I've made here. And she's going to be here. She has family in Bonita Springs.
Oh.
So I imagine that's going to be very exciting for her as well.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Well, do you have any other film projects in the works or ideas you're looking to pursue? What can we look forward to from you in the future?
I would say keep in touch with me over Twitter.
Right.
I have some things in the work. It's always a process of just finding the right idea. Hardy came to me unbelievable. I wasn't even looking for it, and it turned into something so big. And I'm just keep following me because I have some things in the works.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And we're taking a closer look at some of the film offerings coming to the 5th Annual Fort Myers Film Festival next week. We're talking with filmmaker Natasha Verma, whose documentary Hardy will be featured. Also with us here is Ted Dintersmith, executive director of the film Most Likely to Succeed, which will kick off the festival. Festival founder and director Eric Raddatz is with us in studio as well. You can connect with our guests with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And Ted, let's bring you into the conversation now. You're the executive producer of the film Most Likely to Succeed, which was at Sundance. It's going to several other film festivals as well. I imagine your goal would be to get this into the hands of as many educators as you possibly can.
Well, what we're finding is the film appeals not just to educators, but to parents, to students, to people who care about the future of the country. And so we found incredible receptivity anywhere from Sundance, where we did 9 screenings in total, which is a record for Sundance, to a couple weekends ago we showed it to several presidential candidates who not just watched the entire film but stayed for a 90-minute Q&A and said, this really makes me rethink what our priorities should be in educating and preparing our kids for
wow.
a world that doesn't look at all like the world the education system was designed in.
Well, Ted, let's just step back for a minute. Give us an idea on the premise of this film. It seems to take the position, a pretty critical one, regarding where education is in the United States in terms of what we're preparing students for.
Well, I think the film does a great job of looking at the fact that it traces back to the year 1893, our current education system design. So our education system still exists at the time of covered wagons. I mean, that's how far back it goes. And so really what we're saying is if the competition now is to win the Indianapolis 500, can you do it in a covered wagon? Or do you need to rethink the way you go about educating kids? And do you rethink the way you work with and trust teachers to deliver the best possible experience? And so the film team immersed themselves in a school that was designed from scratch to prepare kids for a world of innovation instead of a world of manufacturing. So you live and breathe the experience of these students and teachers, but at the same time, it's in the context of the urgency of helping kids deal with a world where it's not easy to get a job anymore, where so many kids coming out of college end up unemployed or in jobs that are minimum wage jobs. And so there's a real balance there between the urgency of change, but also what's possible. And people who read the film are feeling inspired and motivated to not just, you know, tell other people about the film, but also to help their school move forward.
Right. I understand a significant portion of the film focuses on this one particular school in San Diego that's basically thrown out those, what they see, outmoded education models and really embracing this concept. What can you tell us about that school and what educators and students there are doing differently?
Well, the school is 12 years old. It's actually spread to 11 or 12 schools in San Diego, and it was originally organized by the founder of Qualcomm, who said, wait a minute, you know, we live in a world now where increasingly the interesting and good jobs are innovation-related jobs. What would a school look like if we tried to prepare kids for that world? And they started with a clean slate, which is a real advantage if you're looking at making a school optimized. But you see that these kids' school experience has nothing, it doesn't look at all like normal school experiences of kids. And so these students aren't memorizing things, they don't use textbooks, they're learning as a way to complete projects that they believe in and care about. But I think the most amazing thing is you see the transformation of these kids, that how much they change from the beginning to the end of the school year, and how much they believe in what they're doing. And there's sort of a nice contrast in the film to a different school where the kids sort of admit the fact that most of what school is about is playing a game just to get grades to get into a college. And so the director, I think, does a really great job of laying out those choices. And without saying, you know, telling people what they need to do, but just making sure people are aware that the old model of crunch away, do whatever it takes, get good grades, get into the right college, spend, you know, $100,000 to $250,000 to get a college degree, that's no longer a guarantee of the kind of future that kids really deserve to have.
You know, Ted, education in general, of course, is an issue that's perpetually at the center of the national conversation. Almost every day, I know my own local newscasts here in the morning include at least one story about education, from, you know, reform efforts in the state legislature to how standardized test results should or shouldn't be used, even to how much testing we do. And then I think about you and showing this to, you know, potential presidential candidates. Do you think that most likely to succeed could change the way people think about this conversation in terms of, are we even having the right conversation?
Yeah, I think it already is beginning to have that. Well, we're early in its rollout, so Fort Myers community will have a chance to see this before essentially the rest of the country, but that's exactly what's happening at certain high levels. And people are saying, wait a minute, do we want our priority in education to be teaching, you know, testing and measuring kids and holding teachers accountable to things that generally have nothing to do with life skills, or do we want to have our education system focused on engaging and inspiring kids and having them learn things that are important in life? And so, as I said, when some of these really senior people are looking at it, they're saying things like, wait a minute, I now call into question, I now rethink the entire set of priorities, because most people just think it's a given that better standardized test scores are equivalent to a better education. And you'll hear lots and lots of discussion about, oh my gosh, we're 17th way behind Korea, how do we close that gap? But if you look at Korea, you know, no Nobel Prizes in its history, no creativity in its society, no innovation in its society. And so you have to ask yourself, why are we chasing Korea? You know, we're the most innovative and creative country on the face of the planet. Why don't we educate to our strengths instead of playing a game that we'll never win, nor do we really want to even be in, I think.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, when you saw the film, did you kind of know immediately this is something you wanted to feature, you wanted to open with this?
Yes, you know, there's so many good films out there, and it was really important because in Lee County especially, we've made national headlines with regards to the Lee County Board. Mm-hmm. Opting out of some of these standardized testing in the Common Core, and they had a lot of fallout up because of it. But we have innovative, forward-minded thinkers in town, and this is the type of community that will embrace at least that discussion and are intelligent enough to get that we need to watch this film. We need to have every educator, every teacher, every parent, every student out there to see this film, and if one person attends, that will shape in our future of the way we educate our children in the future in a better way, so that we have a better society to live in. Well, that's something that's so inspiring. So it may not have impacted me on the way that when I saw Kurt Cobain montage of a Heck, for example, which is going to play also here in Fort Myers 2 months before it airs on HBO. But having that as our opening night film seemed like it wouldn't have the same kind of impact, and it won't really impact our society in the really strong positive way that I see this film doing. So once I reached out to them, I said, this is really relevant. So maybe the most relevant film that anyone will see this year, and we want to play it at the Fort Myers Film Festival. And then that's when we started talking seriously about it. So yes, it was nearly immediate. But there's so many good films that are within the middle of this film festival that I don't want to disrespect any of them, including Hardy with Natasha sitting right here, because hers is a very inspirational film. But this film is the most relevant film that anyone seeing it will see this year.
All right. Well, we are coming up towards the end of the segment here, but just wanted to find out how folks can get tickets to the festival and exactly how that works. if you necessarily can't do every day, can you buy tickets for an individual day or an individual screening?
Yes, of course. And we're in the five locations. We have some overlap this year. So while most of our films are at the Sidney and Byrne Davis Arts Center downtown Fort Myers, we have screenings at Saturday, the 28th, at the Alliance for the Arts. And we have screenings at the Regal Bell Tower Cinemas. It's our first year at the Bell Tower. So we have screenings you can buy there. And then we have screenings opening at the Barbara B. Mann Performing Arts Hall, and then the closing at the Broadway Palm Dinner Theater. We're in the best venues in town, and we have the support of this community. And these are really the best places to see them. So you can go each of them directly. Go online at fortmyersfilmfestival.com. There's a very simple calendar. You can click on the calendar. It goes right to the tickets. A lot of people are trying to go to Bell Tower and buy them before, but you have to either go down to the Sidney Byrne Davis Arts Center, go online, or day of, purchase tickets for the Bell Tower. But all the rest of them, you can go to our website to click on to head to their website, or you can buy them directly off of our website. And that's, again, fortmyersfilmfestival.com.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program. But thank you so much, Eric, Natasha, and Ted, for being with us.
Thank you, John. Big fan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Eric Raddatz is the founder and executive director of the Fort Myers Film Festival, which returns for its fifth year, March 25th through the 29th. Natasha Verma is an NBC2 news anchor and director of the documentary film Hardy, which will be screened at the festival. And Ted Dinnersmith is executive producer of the film Most Likely to Succeed, which will kick off the festival next Wednesday evening. For more information, again, go to fortmyersfilmfestival.com. We're taking a short break, but when we return, bicycling enthusiasts are celebrating March as Bike Month here in the Sunshine State. But when it comes to safety, Florida is the deadliest state in the nation for cyclists. News Press reporter Janine Zeitlin recently published an extensive investigation into conditions for cyclists sharing our roadways. We'll take a closer look at what she found out and what can be done to address the issues. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.